Hi and welcome to Building Tomorrow's Insurer. I am host Nigel Fellows-Freeman, founder and CEO of Canopy. And today we will be continuing with our limited series, exploring one of the most exciting emerging technologies everywhere, but also in insurance. And that is no less than Gen AI and of course, the large language models that sit behind it. And so throughout this series, we're going to be deep diving into, continue to deep dive into Gen AI, kind of how is it going to impact the insurance value chain? How's it going to transform how insurance is delivered? And I could not be more excited about our guest today. We are joined by Indigo Orton, who is the co-founder of Oslo.ai. He is a pioneer, no less. Look at that, a pioneer in applying Gen AI to streamline operations and reduce a bunch of costs. And he's a massively well-versed person to bring kind of this very, very technical thing to life. He's got a PhD from Cambridge in machine learning, and so he's got all the academic knowledge there, and he's bringing that to the startup world. So we could not be more excited to kind of go through the conversation around how it's going to impact insurance, how it's going to impact taking kind of unstructured data sets, and that, I suppose, that critical part of data control and security. So Indigo, thank you. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk.
Before we jump deeply in, this is maybe just a random question, but an interesting one for me. How was Cambridge?
It was really exciting. I love the English. That's why I'm on here. You know, Cambridge, yeah, it was really wonderful. It was a great place to do a PhD. It was a great place to shut out the outside world, especially during COVID, and just be able to focus really deep on one problem. And I tell you what, there's no better way to come out of COVID than straight into your field becoming the hot thing all over the world. It was a really good time and a great place to do research.
Awesome. And can you maybe just give us a little bit, before we jump into Oslo and the inspiration there, can you give us a little bit of just a context on the kind of your research and what you did there?
Yeah, absolutely. So my research was in an area called program analysis, which we're going to get a bit technical here, but it's basically the middle of computer science where everything I touched was other things to do with software. So my work, I was doing research that would analyze other software. I'd have an automated system would analyze other software, look at what it was doing, and identify how can we make it faster, how can we improve it in lots of different ways, and sort of looking at the complexity of how do you build programs, how do you build them well, and then how do you do this sort of automated analysis of that afterwards. But I think also, you know, relevant, very relevant for this discussion is my co-founder's research, also another PhD at Cambridge. That's where we met. And his research was dealing with an area called reinforcement learning, which is this really interesting area of machine learning where you can train machine learning models by sort of having them do tasks and trying to learn from that. So, you know, a big area that he was researching is how do you bring that into, how do you do that with infrastructure? How do you do that efficiently? How do you run that at scale? I think we're going to dive a whole lot into that and cost and latency. But, you know, just a sort of tidbit there, you know, some of his work dealt with how do you model the climate change in Antarctica, and how do you model sort of different behaviors in Antarctica, and how do you use machine learning models to do that? And, you know, lots of really big, interesting machine learning questions there that surprisingly translate really well into generative AI and the language models, and all of the algorithms are the same stuff. So it's, pretty broad area of research going into that.
Love it. And that's kind of like a seamless transition, I guess, those you guys coming together. So kind of inspiration behind Oslo, how did it come to be?
Absolutely. Well, so the core inspiration is essentially a point of going, we have this deep expertise in generative AI. We have this deep expertise in machine learning, and also in how do you do that quickly and at scale, and saying as sort of a fundamental starting point, we think that AI is a huge force for good in the world, and that it should be in and will be in all different types of software. The challenge is that most people building software are not going to be experts in machine learning, and nor should they be. They should be experts in the part that they're bringing to the world, the area that they're improving in the world. You know, in your case, that's let's improve insurance really well. You shouldn't have to be an expert in machine learning to get all of the benefits there. And we went, okay, how can we bring that to lots of software teams and enable them to build great AI into their systems without requiring them to totally skill change into being machine learning? And so because of a whole lot of ways our research work that we don't need to get into, it lends itself really well to that problem of how do I enable other people to really build great AI that is specialized to their problem set. And you know, a whole lot of the problems we solve are essentially saying, these are problems that you will face as you bring AI into production. How can we help you do that better? And how do we do that at scale?
Super interesting. I was just at an InsurTech conference on Tuesday, and there was the kind of head of AI at Suncorp, one of the large insurers here. One of the kind of things that he was talking a lot about was kind of how they thinking about Gen AI being a really pivotal tool for co-piloting their employees, but primarily to reduce cost and kind of increase efficiency. And so can maybe talk to that around kind of, I know this is like maybe a key fundamental thing that you think about a lot, which is kind of increase efficiency and reduce cost to execute these kind of models. And so can you kind of talk to that around how kind of people should be thinking about the work that you do to be able to increase efficiency and reduce cost when you're executing these type of models?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I want to step back and just do two little bits of scene setting. One, you know, you've been talking a lot about LLM, so I'm sure you're diving into lots of different use cases they have. But it's really worth just reminding everyone listening that generative AI goes well beyond ChatGPT. It goes well beyond sort of fun chat interfaces that are sort of interesting, maybe useful in different parts. The really big takeaway with Gen AI for most use cases is that it makes a whole lot of problems really accessible. So Gen AI doesn't have to be a chat interface. It can be a whole lot to do with, I want to take this unstructured data, maybe that's a stream of emails, maybe that's a policy document, whatever it might be within your context, and I want to transform it in some way. I want to extract this information. And Gen AI has just made that really easy to get started on and to do well. And so it goes a long way beyond chatting to all these other aspects that are then important to building products. Now, when we think about efficiency, there's two sides to it. You know, there's the output efficiency of how much time are you saving people? And I think that, you know, beyond the really cool demos people have, for most organizations, the big shift will be saving a whole lot of people, a whole lot of time, and a whole lot of tedious work, you know, essentially trying to work with unstructured data, trying to, you know, take this policy and read the PDF yourself and do data entry. You know, people are far more skilled than needing to do data entry, and we should enable them to do that. So that's sort of that part of the efficiency. And then the next step there is saying, okay, great, I want to make it much faster. I want to use Gen AI, make it much faster to extract this information from for example, from a PDF. But so how do we do that efficiently? Because no one wants to then upload a PDF, sit around for 10 minutes or 2 minutes even, and pay $10 per document. Now that might work for some use cases, that might be a totally fine cost, but a lot of use cases will then want to run that at scale. You want to be able to do, you know, let's say 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 documents that you might have sitting in your data lake of all the policies you have, and you want to transform all of them, or you want to provide a service to other people, and every time someone uploads a document, you don't want to spend $10 processing that document for them. So all of these problems start to come out when you start to say, okay, how do I take this to production? And I think just in terms of how we get there and sort of the high level thought people should take away, the problems that people are trying to solve can be solved by smaller models. So ChatGPT does really well at a whole lot of different problems, and that's fantastic. It's really useful. It's also highly inefficient at doing that because it does so well at every problem. And if you say, okay, it does this well at all problems, but I only need it to do this well at one single problem, you can get a much smaller model that does that really, really well and can be very efficient, can be very fast. So, you know, that document you're processing can cost, you know, fractions of a cent and be done in 50 milliseconds because you've got a model that just does that task really well. And when you start to look at most use cases, most of them can be dealt with a specialized model. And that's really what we see as sort of the next steps of taking this technology into production in most organizations.
Yeah, it's I think that latency piece, especially kind of, I think latency and cost are, like, if I was to break that down in terms of, like, summarizing, like, great for POC type stuff, but as soon as you try and go into kind of production grade kind of product, that those two things are really important. Because someone doesn't want to sit around for a bunch of time, and as soon as you have some sense of scale, it gets really expensive and cost prohibitive. And so,
And also, if I just jump in there, sort of you have The other thing that you see a lot, so we see this all the time, right? We come to work with someone and they say, we've got this great proof of concept. It's working really well. We use ChatGPT and now we want to go to production and we don't know where to go from here. And that's totally normal and very fine, because the key problem that those people should be solving is, what is my product or my service or my system, process, whatever it might be in your organization, what should that look like? And prototyping that, getting a proof of concept, that is the important aspect for that. Taking to production, that's another step that doesn't need to be a skill set within your team. But I think that the other aspect beyond cost and latency is then quality and consistency. You know, within your demo, you'll have three examples that you work through, and you'll make sure that those three examples work perfectly because it's a demo and you really want it to look good. But then you want it to work on anything anyone uploads, or any sort of system that might be in your data warehouse. And all of a sudden, you start hitting these edge cases, and you want to know where those failure points will be, and you want to be able to prevent them. And even if your system has to say, okay, I don't know how to handle this, that's fine. But you need that consistency piece as well. I think that's sort of the table stakes, is making sure that it actually does what you're saying it will do and stops when it's not going to do that. And so there's sort of these table stakes, and then there's, okay, but how? Then there's, you know, how do we really make that work as we go to production? That's cost and latency and all these other aspects.
I mean, in that kind of movement to production, you probably see this a bunch of your clients, which is insurers are pretty nervous about data and privacy, and rightly so, right? They're custodians of a lot of customers' information, and so they care a lot about kind of the security of that. And obviously, the maybe the last kind of 12 months or so, there's some carriers have done some little kind of playing around. But like we've spoken about, like there's this kind of closed model and open model world. And so can you maybe just touch on kind of how you think about maybe the mechanics of control and security, not specifically just only kind of documents, but just generally in terms of executing kind of generative AI models within like an insurer's ecosystem?
Absolutely. So I think my answer is going to be very boring, which is that you should use all of the systems that you currently have that already define that security. You know, all insurers will have either their own data centers, or they'll be using a cloud system where they've got great security policies, where they've got everything locked down. They know that this is safe. And I think that the simple answer is, you should be running, executing these Gen AI systems, running these models in that infrastructure, in your safe virtual private cloud or whatever it is for you. You should be running it within that system so that it's effectively just another server in there that you do a bit of processing on, and then you're done. The scary part comes when you're sending it outside to the outside world and saying, please process this sensitive information. And, you know, as we all know, organizations can provide assurances around the fact that, no, we definitely handle your data well, don't worry. And maybe that fits within some policy standpoints people have. But most of the time, you're going to be saying, okay, even if you're, you know, giving me great promises, and even if you're giving me contractual agreements, I'm still not comfortable with the idea that there might be an exposure here. So I still want to run it internally. And my message would be, it's very possible and really not that hard to run it internally. And you get a whole lot of benefits because, you know, there's a data security angle. That's absolutely massive. Mm-hmm. There's also a whole lot of cost angles there, where if you're running it on someone else's server externally, they're putting a markup on top of what they're paying the cloud service provider and so on. So I think there's a whole lot of value here in just a really boring answer of, run it in your own infrastructure. And there's lots of services like my service, like Oslo.ai, that really want to help you build models that can run in your infrastructure. And I think the same then goes, I'll go one more step here, which is the same sort of thinking process then goes for, okay, but who owns the model? You know, no one wants to get caught out where they have a service provider who then all of a sudden says, oh, actually, we're no longer going to be doing that, so your models don't work anymore, or you need to stop using the models. No, if you've invested the time in your organization to get this working, you should own that model. You should run that model. That should be a part of your system. And that's very possible. And anyone that's sort of telling you, no, it has to be on someone else's server, you know, they've got all this expertise. No, that's not right. There's a whole lot of ways in which you can run it on your system safely, securely, cost efficiently, and with ownership. And that's a wonderful place to be.
Yeah, it's very much so. I'm sure that'll be music to a bunch of carriers' ears. there is a flip side though, right? In terms of if we were to look over the last 12 months, it's the topic of every board meeting at these every carrier in any MGA, I'm sure. And everyone's putting out into the public their kind of strategic plans and those kind of things of what they're going to do. And I'm sure that they're starting to dabble in some co-pilots and those kind of things to help some staff. But there are obviously going to be really key challenges and like really big pitfalls in terms of these organizations starting to do a transition to use generative AI in some use cases across the organization. Have you got any kind of, is there any big ones that you maybe would call out to say like to any kind of, I don't know, CIOs or any of the folks that are looking at these kind of systems to, for them when they're doing some DD and thinking about this to look out for?
Okay, so I think it's really, to be honest, it's a lot of what we've been talking about, which can be summarized as data security, number one. Where is it running? How is it running? And are you then able to own the resulting models and all of the resulting data? Number two, cost of models and cost of running those models. It's great to have a model that appears to be working well, but then really consider what scale are you going to be running this at? And is that viable? You know, it's a great feature to have a co-pilot over here, but if suddenly that hits your budget enormously, is that actually a viable feature to build in? Because we all want systems that work better, but we all need them to actually be sustainable. Quality and consistency, huge problem we see when people try to take this to production. You have your demo, it's working well. With the examples that your team is coming up with, it might even still be working quite well. And then all of a sudden, you know, to misuse a quote, you get punched in the face. And all of a sudden you go, oh, wow, I didn't expect any of this data that people were giving me. What do I do? And how do I know when that's happening? How do I know when that's failing? So quality and consistency then become a huge problem. And I think all of that sort of packaged up in a simple aspect of demos and proof of concepts are easy. They're really important from a product perspective, thinking through what is it going to look like? How does that work? Really important. Great that it's fast and easy to do. Taking it to production is a different set of challenges that you then need to engage with.
Yeah. Super interesting. I'm going to like pivot away from insurance for a little bit. We'll come back and we'll wrap into insurance, but I just want to kind of maybe open our minds a little bit to Gen AI in a more broader sense. So I'm sure you just kind of saw that OpenAI released a new model this week with in terms of video from text prompts, and I watched it and I thought, holy, I'm sure they obviously had released specific things that made a massive impact, but kind of the speed of change here feels like I'm in technology and it feels fast. And I showed that to my parents and they nearly fell off their seats. They said, like, I'm just not even going to look at it. So I'm just kind of interested in kind of more broadly, Gen AI's progression, its speed. Kind of, can you give us a little, just a taste of what you're seeing on the ground in terms of, this technology, where's it going? Kind of what people should be looking for, people should be looking forward to.
Absolutely. It's hugely exciting. And I think what groups like OpenAI are doing is spectacular. And I think it's really pushing the field forward. I think that the interesting thing we see, again, is, for example, text to video. It's actually an incredibly interesting machine learning problem. Getting that to a point where it's, let's call it production ready for whatever its use cases might be, it takes a lot longer. And I think that's where we're seeing maturity move at different paces with different use cases of Gen AI here. So I think that a great way to think about the sort of developments within Gen AI is in, let's say, three categories or three directions. One direction is the OpenAIs of the world and Google and so forth, where they are trying to build the biggest model and the best model. And they're trying to move towards this idea of artificial general intelligence, you know, this super intelligence that does everything. And that's sort of their target. And good on them for doing that research. And it's really pushing everyone forward. And that's fantastic. But that is quite different to, you know, let's say day-to-day use cases of AI within the systems that we all use as a society. And so then that's where we get to two other big directions of development. One is what I call, let's say, the practical AI. And that's the sort of stuff that we're working on, where we're saying, great, this is really useful. GenAI has been spectacular at making it more accessible to a wider variety of people to build on. How do we bring that? How do we solve these challenges like cost and latency, like data security? How do we solve challenges around evaluation and quality and consistency and knowing where it fails? All of these, let's call them, you know, unsexy but very practical problems. You know, telling you this is where your system's going to fail is not, you know, a nice job to do, but it's actually a really important one for many industries. It's a separate problem to how do I build a much bigger model? And so I think there's a whole area of research and development where the industry is going, how do I make this really practical and how do I solve real problems with this at the moment? And that just comes with maturity. You know, at the end of 2020 and early 23, everyone was doing the prototyping, was doing proof of concepts, was exploring what that looked like. And as that's matured, we've started to see people going, okay, but this is where I actually save people time. This is where I make the world better by saving a whole lot of time here or saving a whole lot of cost there. And I think then the third direction to round it out is it's actually the opposite of the AGI work, which is how do we make these models as small as possible? And how do we make them run as fast as possible? It relates to the practical application work, but where practical application is dealing with the immediate productionization challenges, this sort of work in trying to get really small is hugely valuable for things such as how do I run models on my phone? And if you can run a model on your phone, then suddenly your app can be doing a whole lot of this work in real time. So you can be typing in your calendar app and it can be immediately saying, oh, okay, let me generate these events for you without needing to talk to a server, which will make it more responsive in real time. That's really exciting. You know, other things are, I think as we compress these models to be smaller and faster to run, we will see them be used in many more real-time interfaces. So, you know, for example, imagine I am a company that wants to ingest some data from a file that someone uploads. Very standard for the insurance industry, lots of files that people want to parse and upload and get the data out of. Right now, people might be expecting that to take 10 seconds, 30 seconds, 2 minutes, whatever it might be. But what if that can be, you know, 100 milliseconds, where it's faster than a human will see the change? What happens then? How does that change our products? How does that change what we're doing? And I think that's where this third direction of development is going. So hugely exciting to be in Gen AI at the moment. Hugely exciting, I think, for people to be building on Gen AI, because if you're starting now, if you're building out your product and your systems on Gen AI now, you just get to take advantage of all of these developments as they come. And if you build your system to be dynamic so that you can leverage the newest models as they come out, then you get to take advantage of that and you get to take advantage of all of the benefits that come along with that. If you wait for it all to come, you'll be waiting a long time.
Yeah, we're never going to, it's long, we're in the first innings, right? We've got a long way to run.
That's right.
Coming, and maybe just extending that a little bit in terms of thinking about kind of what you're seeing in your company, like day to day, in terms of maybe, I don't know, a use case, a success story, like something that you're kind of maybe seeing where kind of you've, maybe what you can or can't talk about, and obviously no company names, et cetera, but like, is there anything you can talk about in terms of some really nice success stories that you've seen around maybe that cost reduction and that reduced latency that you've gone, actually, this kind of specific use case has been really effective?
Well, to be honest, what we're seeing, and you're right, you know, can't share too much, but the high level, we're seeing, especially within InsurTech, so we work a lot within InsurTech and FinTech, and a lot of what we're seeing is looking at the cost reduction and time saving, but from a human level. So saying, okay, how do I avoid this manual data entry? How do I replace that with some form of Gen AI? And how do I build that into my system? And we're seeing large savings there. I think because of the challenges we've talked about, in terms of taking things to production, we don't normally see people measuring how much cost saving have we had over, you know, using the OpenAI API, because it just didn't meet table stakes of cost and latency. And so there wasn't even really a question of improving from there. It was just, can we have the quality we need while also having those other aspects? So it's not a super interesting answer, but I think we're seeing a lot of use cases, a lot of very practical use cases in FinTech and InsurTech in dealing with, let's say, the aspects of the industry that are more legacy and that, you know, a legacy for a reason and that don't change quickly for a good reason. And I think historically within these industries, what we've seen is big transformation projects to try and sort of update and use things more digitally. What we're starting to see as well is being able to do that more incrementally and in sort of more small immediate effects, because we can say, okay, we don't need the whole industry to change. We don't need the regulator to come in and say, okay, we're all moving over to this protocol here. Mm-hmm. As an individual organization, I can start saying, okay, I'm just going to put a little bit of AI in there to handle that manual bit of data processing. And all of a sudden, my system can be far more digital and far more automated. And so I think that's what we're seeing a lot of success stories around, is sort of the, let's say, bringing up to the state of the art in digital work without needing the whole industry to change at one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I think that kind of leads into these kind of, I was going to ask about kind of primary advantages. Like if you were to think about an insurance company or an MGA or anyone in the kind of that's in that kind of that part of the value chain, kind of what are the some like advantages for those companies to integrate Gen AI into their operations? Maybe is it on the agent side? Maybe it's on the administration side? And we're seeing on Canopy's end, that's there are two places that we're seeing a lot of like opportunity, but I'm kind of interested in if that kind of lines up with you as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think what we're seeing a lot of is sort of, again, solutions falling into, let's say, two high level categories here of saving a lot of human time, you know, and tasks like manual data entry, great place to save human time, great place where companies are getting started because it's safe. It doesn't have to be customer facing. It can just save time. It's a very immediate return on investment, very easy business case for the technology team within insurance companies to make. And then let's say the second category is maybe you could call them new superpowers that you're giving to agents. These are things like having co-pilots where you can say, you know, what is my risk profile at the moment? What is, you know, what are we seeing in this part of the market? You know, I'm seeing a policy come in for this. What should I be thinking about? And that's really exciting work. And I think that's where we're seeing sort of, let's say, like the demos at the moment. I think that coming to full production will take a bit longer. Because it's harder to really achieve that with full confidence that you're not going to have any hallucinations or any issues around that. So what we're starting to see instead is more of this, let's call it this sort of mixing of those two components, where if you have a system that can bring a whole lot of your unstructured policy documents into a nice structured database, then having your dashboards that already work with that database provide the analytics out, that's where we're starting to see these new superpowers coming in much more sort of confidence building ways. And I think where we're then seeing that go, that's really exciting, especially within insurance, is say, okay, how do we combine these two and enable things that just were not feasible before in the industry? How do you enable things that are really expensive, analysis that is really expensive to do right now, but we can make it really cheap because all of a sudden extracting that data is viable? And I think where we all want this to go is how do we serve customers better? How do we serve them faster? How do we get accurate quotes out? How do we get quotes that are taking into account all the various risks that might be involved? And how do we get them back to the customer faster? Because a customer, you know, they want that result as soon as possible. This is a tedious part, unfortunately, of their day. And the faster you can get that result, the clearer you can make that result, the better it is for them. And I think that's where we all hope to be getting to and all are working towards. But yeah, like you'll have a lot more on that than I will.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And there's a couple of examples. And we spoke to a bunch of underwriters, and like we asked them the question, right, which is because I kind of went with a bunch of work that we're doing and thinking about is how do you kind of automate that flow from submission all the way through to quote, all the way through to kind of looking at external data sources, bringing those pieces in, and then like producing a quote without touching a person. But and that would, you would think that that would be pretty scary to an underwriter in terms of where's my job going. And I think that's kind of a second conversation we can have around kind of jobs, et cetera. But actually there's like a really interesting thing when you kind of shine the light to a bunch of these underwriters about this kind of technology, and you kind of tell and you show them their capability of them actually they get to spend a bunch of time on the risk. They get to spend a bunch of time on speaking to the customer, understanding more information. And all of a sudden, the stuff that took 80% of their day that only provided 20% of the value, actually they can flip that on its head, and like they can spend all of their time on the things that add massive value, but the 80% is really using a piece of technology versus themselves. And so we were quite surprised by that. We thought it was going to be, everyone's going to be pretty worried about jobs, but actually there was a lot of excitement there about them, their capability to just be super powered.
And I think that's exactly right. And I think, I mean, I certainly have never met an underwriter who, when I've asked them, what's your job, has said data entry. I'm a great data entry person. And I think this is what we see. It's in insurance and it's in every other industry as well. The interesting work and the work that you hire that person for, that's their skill set. And that skill set is not data entry and, you know, tedious processing. That skill set is analysis, and that skill set is talking to the customer, understanding the context, identifying if there are other attributes that could be included in the calculation of the quote and of the policy that would actually adjust the risk profile, which they didn't have time to do. So I think the great thing that Gen AI brings is it's not going to take jobs. It just makes jobs more interesting because it takes the tedious work away.
Yeah, it does. And it's like that. I had another use case when I was chatting to some folks last week around kind of multimodal, meaning like on the claim side. And so you can have like somebody send some pictures of a car crash of the actual car, the claim that got put in terms of what the person said happened. And then the models being able to kind of look at those two kind of there are two inputs, which are different forms, being able to put them together and actually then go like, is this right? Is there a kind of, is this a true claim? Are they saying what actually happened? If you're looking at the resulting climate, what was the weather like on that day? Do you know what I mean? Like there's a bunch of all these kind of multi-data inputs, and then being able to kind of, help those claims assessors make better decision making.
And I think a big way we think about this is that it is far more efficient and effective for people to be, let's say, verifying data and validating data as opposed to doing the data entry or creation. And so when we think about this, this goes a lot to how do insurance companies, insurtechs adopt this technology, that you don't have to do this massive flick a switch and all of a sudden we're fully automated and I hope it still works, you know, call the fire department if it doesn't. No, it's far more incremental than that. You can say, okay, I'm going to have something automate this, and then I'll still have my underwriter go through and just double check that, because they can scroll through and double check things in, you know, a tenth of the time or a 20th of the time it would take them to do all of that data entry. And so I think that's what you see a lot in these sort of scenarios and in these use cases. And I think as you get a lot more creativity out of everyone in this industry, but especially those people for whom you're saving a lot of time, because all of a sudden now, instead of pulling your hair out doing data entry for 3 hours a day, you're thinking about how can I solve for this customer segment more? Who can I talk to more in this area? Who else might this be relevant to? Or even if you're a bit more of a processes and technology person, okay, this is a really interesting bit of tech that has just adjusted how my work occurs. Now, what if I extend that a bit further? What if I take that and think, okay, how do I do this analysis with it? And I think that's the sort of creativity that will drive an industry forward. And I think that's the sort of creativity that you want to be enabling for your people and you want to be enabling for your organizations, because that's what's going to then give all of these companies a leg up.
Yeah. And good, extending that a little bit in terms of, I'm sure folks are thinking, their minds are opening up around like, what could they potentially kind of use this technology for? And I think sometimes it's very important to have a problem to solve, and then the right technology being applied to it versus trying to kind of apply Gen AI to every problem that sits across the business. But I'm sure there's an enormous range, a broad range of things that can be applied to. Now, when you think about, obviously we've spoken a bunch about data processing today and kind of unstructured data, and you're doing a really good job there. Kind of, is there kind of any other kind of ways that you're seeing commercially, maybe not even just in insurance, but kind of outside of insurance, that maybe the insurance folk can think about how it kind of brings it in and thinks about their day in terms of like really good commercial use cases that people are using across the market? I'll get an example maybe I'll bring is maybe the Shopify example of like the guys there doing a bunch of work to be able to, I guess, change websites based on kind of what the season is or kind of how they should be pricing different different SKUs. Is there any kind of thing that you can Yeah, just open people's minds a little bit about what Gen AI use cases could look like.
Absolutely. So I think, actually, it's funny that you bring up Spotify there, because I think that there's, we happen to know a few of the engineers who are directly working on that. And I can't say much, but I can say, gosh, they deal with a lot of the challenges that we've been talking about today. And that no organization has it easy or perfect. They're just working through those challenges, and they have some great people there. So I think there's a really broad range of use cases. I think from, let's say, the hyper-functional. So for example, we use Linear, which is a project management software. And if I'm wanting to look at what is happening right now within my company, and you know, what are the next things we're going to be needing to think about, I can ask it a question. Now, it's not going to be a chat interface in these cases. In this, for example, I can say, I want a filter, but I can type that filter in natural language. So I could say something like, okay, what am I going to need to be doing on sales in the next 2 weeks? And it will, instead of trying to answer that with some sort of, you know, two paragraph output that I then need to read, it will just create the filter that works with all of their existing data already and just filter it to, here are all of the projects that are going on, here are all of the tasks that you will see. And so I think that there are sort of exciting use cases in terms of, you know, like Shopify adjusting websites and so forth. I get really excited, and maybe I'm a boring person because of this, but I get really excited about how we marry generative AI with all of the existing products and systems that we have that work so well. Because I tell you what, in most cases, I don't want a chat interface. I want something that, you know, if I'm doing analysis for an insurance company, I want something that's going to work within my existing systems that I'm going to, you know, type some analysis into, and it's going to make that a whole lot faster for me. So personally, I get really excited about how we make humans more efficient and, you know, enable them to do their creative process and analysis faster than they were before. I think it's interesting to think about where are lots of different companies going with this. You know, you're seeing a lot of image generation, and how is that taking over marketing? Because advertising is now starting to see a huge amount done with image and video generation. And that's where we start to see, okay, in which industries is generative AI going to become a core part of the creative and content production process? And how do we bring that back to insurance? You know, when we're thinking about adjusting insurance policies effectively for, you know, every customer is an individual customer. How do we think about adjusting that well? Okay, how do we bring Gen AI in some way into that process to make that more efficient and make that faster? And so I think there's a whole lot there. I think that...
Do you think there's anything on this kind of multi-agent stuff? Like in terms of like agents working together in terms of... I think this is quite a long way off, but I did hear like some folks talking about kind of an interest of like an agent being able to go off and work with another agent to get multiple quotes and create specific policies, yeah, specific users, etc. So kind of like multi-agent. Now, this is something a little bit out of my depth in terms of how these kind of agents work together. But like, is there anything kind of in that kind of agent, multi-agent kind of world?
So I think there is, and I think we should always be optimistic with this technology. I think that it's not as radically different from the rest of Gen AI as mm-hmm. people might be trying to make it out to be. Mm-hmm. It's essentially agents are essentially programs that are sitting there with an LLM that are, you know, putting data into the LLM and pushing it out. And multi-agent is take the output of one LLM and put it into another one and, you know, yeah, see what that output is. And it's actually surprisingly effective for a whole lot of tasks. Mm. I think that we'll see some industries where that works really well. So I think a really exciting area here is examples such as research agents. So this is just a program that's running on a server fairly continuously that will go out and look at, you know, what has Reuters just published and how does that affect what we might be working on? And how do I, you know, highlight that to the relevant person within our organization? And, you know, we'll be scraping the web looking for information. And I think that's where we'll see agents work. I don't think we'll see these autonomous agents take over the role of, let's say, insurance agents and human mm-hmm. agents. I think instead they'll sort of just be, it's almost the difference with an agent is you don't need to ask it for something initially. It will just sort of run and try and bring you things. I think some other examples where we see agents, you might call them agents, you can just call them processes, whatever you feel comfortable with. But and other examples that are useful, I think that we see, for example, in different customer service scenarios and organizations, we see companies using automation around, has this customer provided all the information we need to see? Can we ask them for more information? I think you can imagine that within an insurance context where maybe you have a slightly nicer relationship with your customer, a bit more handholding, a bit more premium service, but you still don't need an underwriter to go and scroll through a few hundred pages of documents they've provided to double check if they've provided everything that you're looking for. You can have some agent go through those documents for you and highlight to the insurance provider, you still need to ask for X, Y, and Z. And that's what they need. I think one other point I'd round out my three options here. Mm. I think what we see a whole lot within creative industries again, and I think we'll see a lot more industries become creative in their own way as we can take more of this sort of tedious automation out of the question. I think we'll see what we're seeing in creative industries. So in creative industries, we have people using images and generating images and generating videos, but they're not necessarily generating the final image using that technology. But it does enable them to move much faster and iterate much more quickly on their ideas. And so you can work through a whole, world of imagination that you're trying to come up for. Maybe you're building a game or something. You can work through your whole imagination because you can get an image representing that in 2 seconds or in 30 seconds, and that's much better than drawing it. Now, how that relates back to insurance is I think that we'll start to see people testing different scenarios much faster. As we get systems that are better at simulating scenarios and we get systems that are better at generating responses, we'll see people experimenting more with, okay, I want to adjust this policy in this way, or I want to respond to this customer in that way, or I want to understand what would the effect of a scenario A, B, or C be when I'm working on this policy, and using that to iterate much more quickly and sort of almost providing those leaps for the mental processing humans do and say, okay, let me provide resources for you to be able to do that much faster. And so I think there's inspiration we can draw, and it all comes down to how do you work within your role and how does that play within, let's call it a more cautious and appropriately so more cautious industry than perhaps the advertising industry.
Yeah. Pivoting back to us a little bit, we are obviously collaborating with Oslo on some specific features at the moment. We won't go into too much detail. We won't kind of tell the world exactly what's going on. But I'm kind of interested in maybe if you discuss some of the main problems we're kind of collaborating on, but that we're looking to try and solve for insurers, and then maybe the extension of that of how it's going to enhance the agent's experience.
Absolutely. So, well, do you want to start with sort of what, Canopy's perspective on this? Because I think you bring a much more interesting insurance perspective and how that workflow occurs. And then I can talk a bit more to, okay, how do we do that in an effective way?
Yeah. So the core kind of problem that we have seen with lots of our carriers and MGAs really across the value chain for a long time is this kind of first part of the submission flow, which is a submission document plus an email, maybe plus a conversation, plus some maybe additional kind of risk data documents, all needing to be kind of consumed by the underwriter, then having to go through a manual process of taking all that information, entering it into the core system, and that could have, on a commercial property, for example, that could have 50 properties, and each of those has 100 attributes. And so all of a sudden, they're spending 2 days in just purely taking that kind of submission piece. And then I think the piece that extends past that is then, how do you then map that into a product in terms of how do you then take the fields you've extracted, map it to a product, apply some business rules or some of the business logic that exists today, and then provide that back to the underwriter to be able to do some decision making on, does this fit within our rails, and are we happy to kind of send the quote to a customer? And so that's like a really key workflow that we've seen, especially in like kind of the submission space. It really taking a lot of kind of we spoke a bit earlier on, like kind of in terms of administration time, and so that's something that we've identified as a real kind of problem use case.
Yeah, and I think I just want to pick up on a few things you were talking about there. So, an example here is we're ingesting a huge amount of information when we're creating that policy, when Canopy's creating that policy internally, and it's taking a long time for the underwriter. But, you know, I think everyone can appreciate how saving someone 2 days of manual data entry is a wonderful thing. I think other unseen aspects that really come through then are things such as you've got a 100 email long thread that has specific little notations for, you know, property 53 and property, you know, 24 needs this on that attribute and sort of all these little annoying bits. And you don't want to forget any of that. You know, how happy is a customer when they discover, you know, after a whole lot of legal due diligence, hang on, you didn't respond to what I asked for back then. So I think that there's automating a whole lot of that to save time. And then there's also these really important aspects of ensuring that you don't forget anything, ensuring that we highlight what has been asked for here. I think you're absolutely right. How do we integrate the various business rules that have come up to adjust for that product that's being built? And I think a really interesting part from the Gen AI piece that we're talking about here is the question of, so there's a whole lot of interesting questions around how do you bring that to production? How do you do that securely? How do we run that? You know, and in this case, I don't think it's revealing too much to say that it's running on Canopy's infrastructure, which is highly secure, and all of the existing systems that operate there. But I think a really interesting part as well that we can talk about is there's a whole aspect of what do you highlight to the underwriter? Because you don't want them to then spend their whole time reviewing absolutely everything. You want to be able to say, look, you know, this, we've got the addresses for all the properties are totally fine. You know, you can check them if you want, but that's okay. What you really should look for is we think that this email has got an interesting adjustment to that property. And, you know, there's some interesting ways that might play. You probably want to have a look at that and really just confirm that that's exactly what you're wanting to have happen. And so it's not just reviewing, has the AI done the right thing? It's also the AI highlighting, are you sure that this is what was intended? And let's really confirm that. So I think there are these powers that you can give an underwriter through this process that go beyond just saving time, but to actually making them better at their job while still leaving the key decision of, you know, is that adjustment what we were looking for to the underwriter who has that expertise.
Yeah, it's superpower in the underwriter, and to that piece, which is picking up things they don't see, and I think they will like kind of maybe shine a little light into what's coming, and that is, and then kind of understanding how to maybe adjust and like interrogate portfolios, how to maybe think about making changes to portfolios, and looking at all of the submission docs that have come in, and be able to ask kind of natural language questions of those documents. There's some pieces there as well, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's where I think about a lot of things in terms of unstructured to structured. And Canopy already has really sophisticated systems for working with insurance policies and helping underwriters in that process.
So Indigo, kind of looking into the future, like how do you envisage the role of Gen AI evolving in the insurance sector? I think there's a bunch of trends, developments that I'm sure you're seeing and that you're expecting to see. And I'd love you to round off the conversation with where should people at home be going in 5 years time, the insurance company may look like this with Gen AI in inside of it. That's a big question.
So it's a really good question. And it's one that I feel incredibly unqualified to answer from an insurance perspective. Mm-hmm.
Instead of outside insurance, maybe go more sector, like sector agnostic and just generally in terms of Gen AI impacting the enterprise.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what we'll see is there's, first, I think if we look at the end customer perspective, because that's what we're all driving towards, how will we have faster, more responsive systems that get the customer the value they're looking for? Insurance, you're trying to provide people with policies that make sense for them while still being within a sensible risk profile for the insurance provider. What goes into that? It's understanding the context that the policy is being provided within. It's understanding the financial context that both the customer is within, but also the insurance provider and what is going to be viable to offer. Those two points encompass a whole lot of it. And the key question is then, how do I get all of the data and information around those questions into my system so I can calculate what makes sense? And I think what we see a huge amount of here is from a sort of customer-facing perspective, just systems becoming a whole lot more intuitive, a whole lot smarter, and a lot faster for getting that result. So we're thinking faster response times and faster times to quote. I don't know if that's a key metric that you track, but I'm hoping it is because I wish my insurance provider would be tracking that.
Yeah.
And so then I think when we look more broadly, again, we come back to these, I think where we're looking over the next year or two, it's very practical. It's unstructured to structured data. Structured data is a superpower in and of itself because there's so much you can do with it. And then it's superpowers for the humans. It's giving them better interfaces to do the analysis that they need to do their job well, to do their risk analysis well. And so that's where we start to see more of these interfaces saying, you know, what is the flood risk involved in this policy? Which will then bring in information around, okay, what's the flood history there? What is the, you know, climate prediction around what sort of severity of flood we might see over the next 10 years while this policy is active? Now, this is information that you can have a human try to look at and try to condense and bring together. But I think as we get systems that make it, you know, let's say a near zero cost to bring in more information and a near zero cost to integrate that information into a sensible answer, we will see insurance and lots of industries pulling from far more data sources to inform the decisions they're making, which will hopefully lead to far better end decisions. So I think that's what I get really excited by, is that there is no perfect answer for any particular question in insurance, I'm sure. But we can get a whole lot better than we are currently providing. Mm-hmm. And we get better by having the data to be able to make that decision. That data is available in the world. We just have to unlock it. And so I think that's where we'll be going. And I think that's a really exciting journey for the insurance industry and players within it to go on. And I think it will be a great moment in 5 years looking back and going, wow, we were really doing a whole lot of manual work and, you know, a whole lot of underwriters looking back and going, I can't believe that was my job. That looks so boring compared to what I'm doing now. Still an underwriter, but just a far more interesting role.
Far more interesting role. I love that that snippet there where you just said all the data is there. We just need to find a way to unlock it. And I think that's a really good way to think about it and wrap today. And Indigo, look, it's been such a wonderful conversation. It's always a pleasure. I know we've spoken for hours at length about this, and I'm sure there'll be kind of hours more in the future digging deep in here. And so thank you so much for today. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. It's always great to talk about where we're taking the insurance industry and I think where we can bring Gen AI into more parts of the world. I think it's just going to make the world better.
Love it. Well, thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Make sure you jump into YouTube channel to watch the video version to see our wonderful faces. And if you'd like to hear any more from industry leaders who are pushing the boundaries of insurance, make sure you do check out other episodes of our podcast series, Building Tomorrow's Insurers. Make sure you jump onto LinkedIn, find us on Twitter, and make sure you send us a note if you'd love to chat about anything. And thank you very much and have a wonderful day.